time for Licking on Lending.
Welcome, everybody. Good to have you with us.
Welcome to Licking on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news, all related to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Transformational Mortgage Solutions. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. Now here's your host of Licking on Lending, David Licking.
Let's begin.
Welcome, everybody. So good to have you with us this Monday, April 5th, 2021. I hope you guys all had a great Easter. I did. It's so much fun to be with family and friends. We kind of went different directions on this Easter, but it's really good to hear about the various things that families do. And we hope you had a really great Easter holiday with your loved ones and friends. So anyway, good to have you with us this Monday morning. This podcast is created by mortgage professionals. It is for mortgage professionals, and we're so grateful to have you as our listener. Again, our commitment is to bring you timely information in an audio format that you can listen to anytime and anywhere. And boy, do we have a good podcast for today, especially the hot topic. Alice has got so much really great information. Alan's got new insights for us. Matt's got some updated market information, and in the Hot Topic segment, we've got joining us my business partner and very good friend, Mark Helm. Fascinating background. He and I are the same age when consulting, and we consult together, and we're going to be talking about Fannie Freddie approvals, going to touch on servicing. It's going to be more than we could possibly get to, but you're going to want to stay tuned to the Hot Topic for all that we have to talk about. I want to say thank you to Industry Syndicate for inviting us to participate with them. We're pleased to be part of this Industry Syndicate. Check out all the podcasts on industrysyndicate.com. And be sure to go through that. By the way, we got a lot of feedback on the recruiting and cultivating leadership the last month. Go back and listen to those podcasts. Those are getting downloaded and shared, not quite like anything we've had here recently. So go back and listen to them if you haven't already done so. Had a great lineup of guests helping you to recruit the right people. And when we first organized that series, I was thinking, with the market, we need to recruit. How do we recruit? What's the best practices? And now interest rates have climbed up, and it's almost on the other side. Who do we keep on the team if we have to downsize it all? So that's great information, and be sure to go back and listen to it. I want to say a special thank you to our sponsors, the Mortgage Bankers Association of America, as well as Finastra, whose Fusion Mortgage Bot solution has created an experience that powerfully helps lenders connect and simplify the borrowing experience, streamlining processes for their employees. Great company, and be sure to check out the Fusion Mortgage Bot solution at the Finastra.com website. Also, Lenders One and Mortgage Collaborative, so glad to be a part of both of these co-ops. They're a smaller group of companies, of like-sized companies, getting together, meeting, and talking about best practices. Both of them do this. They have a slightly different focus, and encourage you to check out. We're members of both of them. See value in both of these organizations, so check out LendersOne.com as well as the Mortgage Collaborative. Also, Community Mortgage Lenders of America, pleased to be a part of that organization. Also, Alice's old company, Indicom, partners with lenders and servicers and mortgage insurers and title insurance companies to achieve one specific goal, and that's to help them grow. Looking at all the various services, check out Indicom, I-N-D-E-C-O-M-M.com. Check that out, as well as Incelerate. Josh Friend has this company called Incelerate. We love what they do because it helps you radically change the process, how you communicate and engage borrowers. The wisdom from that podcast that we recorded back on August 17th is just getting downloaded and shared like crazy. And then also, when you're training people, consider the Knowledge Loop solution. If you're looking at recruiting, be sure to use Mobility MMI, Mortgage Market Intelligence, as well as Modix. Both of these companies complement each other. And while they're direct competitors, they do a great job of really helping you zone in on the right talent for your company. So it fit nicely in with our series that we did over the last month. And also, special thanks to Alice, Alan, and Matt for their contributions each and every week. Let's get over to Rob Van Raphorst with this week's Mortgage Minute.
Hi, I'm Rob Van Raphorst. Welcome to the Mortgage Minute and the latest news from the Mortgage Bankers Association. Last week, HUD Secretary Marcia Fudge issued a statement on the health of the Mutual Mortgage Insurance Fund and the department's decision to not change FHA premiums in the near future. In her decision, she cited uncertainties in the upcoming year regarding the financial impact of delinquencies related to the pandemic. MBA's Bob Brooksmith issued a statement of support. Also last week, the U.S. Supreme Court issued a unanimous decision regarding the Telephone Consumer Protection Act's automatic telephone dialing system definition. In its decision, the court determined that under the TCPA, a device must have the capacity to use a random or sequential number generator to either store or produce phone numbers to be called. This is a big victory for MBA, who has advocated for the last several years to establish a clear and statutory appropriate definition of auto dialer. That's it for this week. Thanks for joining me.
Well, that's a good one. We needed that. Dear God, we needed that. I love what the MBA does. They find causes. They're strong advocates. They do a great job on the Hill. But you can help them by also getting in and having the Mortgage Action Alliance app on your phone, the MAW app, Mortgage Action Alliance. And you can have your voice heard there. They make it so easy for you. So check out the MBA. Of course, you should become a member of the MBA. And love Rob's update. So thank you, MBA. Appreciate all that you do for our industry. And guess what? We're going to have our annual conference live, all get together again in San Diego. It's hard to believe that's going to be around the corner. We're in April, but it's going to be a blink and we'll be there the way things are going. So let's get over to Les Parker's TM Spotlight and this week's Macro View of the Markets. Les?
TM Spotlight Soundbite is brought to you by Power Seller, making hedging easy.
They shut down the growing boom. It died with an awful sound. Countries and states with draconian lockdown allowed COVID to live in the dark. The economic recovery remains fragile with unevenness and bottlenecks like the Suez Canal blockage. It takes over 8 weeks to get supply chains back to normal. After a century, are the roaring 20s ready to roar back? U.S. crude oil and gasoline inventories are trending lower, while U.S. gasoline demand continues to recover. Will we be smoked by the price rise? These views are my own. Want more? Go to tmspotlight.com.
Yeah, very good job. He did Dracula very well, I'd say. Very good, Les Parker. Appreciate that. You can sign up for his newsletter, TM Spotlight, and you can subscribe for free to Les's newsletter. Many of our listeners are, and I'm getting a lot of great feedback on it. If you insert the word, you get the paid version for free. If you put the word power for Power Seller in the promotional code. So be sure to put that in there. So it is very, very, very good. So love having Matt Graham with us and MBS Live. .net. And unfortunately, he cannot be here, so he sent us an update by recording. So let's get over to the update for Matt and what's going on with the financial markets. Matt?
Hey, everybody. Matt Graham, MBS Live, here with you on April 5th, 2021. Bonds are doing fairly well today and had a reasonably uneventful week last week. The big news was the jobs report on Friday afternoon, much, much stronger than expected. Not only that, but the internal components were very strong and interesting for that matter. One of the internal components we look at is the average work week. That refers to the number of hours each employee is working on average. This thing historically tends to run about 34.5 to 34.6 hours each week. And the forecast for the most recent report was for 34.7. It came in all the way up at 34.9. We've only seen numbers that high one other time, and that was also after COVID, as employers are having fewer employees do more work for a variety of reasons. But either way, each tenth of an hour speaks to hundreds of thousands of jobs worth of pent-up labor market demand that could theoretically return to the labor market by the time people are A, more comfortable coming back to work, and B, the vaccination situation and reopening situation in various states gets more back to normal, I guess. So it is definitely a big positive for the labor market, and historically that has been very negative for the bond market. But what we saw on Friday was fairly limited in terms of the selling pressure. It really only got yields back up to those seen on the afternoon of the 31st, so that was Wednesday. And very limited damage relative to what we would expect based on past precedent. Other data in the previous week, home prices surged immensely, the highest on record for FHFA and the highest since before the financial crisis for Case-Shiller. And those were both over 10% year over year. FHFA in particular was 12% year over year. So pretty staggering there. MBA applications ticked down, both for purchases and refis, fairly nominally though. ADP employment did not foreshadow the NFP gain. A lot of times it does, sometimes it doesn't. Last week it didn't. Came in at 517 versus 550. Chicago PMI definitely coming in hot, 66.3 versus 60.7. Pending sales, big drop, 110 versus previous reading of 123.4, and that was a 10% decline, and the lowest reading in a while, back to pre-COVID highs, essentially. And really blame it on inventory, because purchase demand hasn't slowed down based on anecdotal reports from the MBS Live community. ISM manufacturing, very strong, 64.7 versus 61.3 forecast. That is a closely followed report and says good things about the health of the economy. In the week ahead, we have not as much data for sure. ISM non-manufacturing is already out, also coming in hot, 63.7 versus forecast for 59.0. And the prices paid component of that, which sort of can track inflation depending on whom you ask, ticked up to the highest level since 2008. So inflationary pressures are building there, but they really aren't a big concern for bond markets based on what we've seen in terms of inflation break evens. And that refers to Treasury inflation protected securities and the inflation implied by TIPS, which is Treasury inflation protected securities. TIPS yields versus 10-year yields gives us an implied inflation reading, and that has not been moving up nearly as fast as 10-year yields themselves so far in 2021. We definitely do see a correlation between those inflation break-evens and the real rates, as you say, but not one that is signaling investors are alarmed about inflation. Could that change? Certainly, there is some concern about that among a meaningful portion of the market, but it would require a sustained inflation uptick, and most of the market is pretty comfortable with the understanding that the upcoming reports are going to be big, because they're going to be based on months from 2020 that were very, very low in terms of inflation. So that's going to provide for a big year-over-year reading, and that will be temporary. Once that gets caught up in 2 to 3 months, then we will get a better idea of how inflation is really progressing post-pandemic. Thursday is just jobless claims, and then Friday is just the only inflation report of the week, which is just the producer price index, producer prices for final demand, and it is not necessarily a closely followed report. It tends not to move markets. So really very light calendar in terms of economic data for the coming week. In terms of trading levels, we're still watching 1.75% in 10-year yields. That continues to be a potential ceiling, although we've traded over that a little bit here and there. We held under that for the most part last week. We're starting out under that this week. 10-year yields trading unchanged at 1.72 right now. And if they can continue under 1.75, and especially if we can make some faster progress back toward lower levels, it would bode well for the bigger picture, and it would suggest a sideways consolidation, some more stability in the bond market. And it's more worth noting that we have tried to do this a few times, most recently at 1.62, and that didn't turn out very well. But the higher we go, the better the odds are that we're going to be able to stabilize and catch a break. There's no guarantee that this is going to be that time, but it is a better chance than we had at 1.62. If it's not 1.75, we'll turn our attention to the next levels, 1.88, 1.95, and hope not to cross those bridges until and unless we come to them. That said, it would not be a surprise. It should probably be our baseline that we will come to those eventually, as long as the post-COVID economy is even remotely as strong as it is supposed to be. So with that in mind, how soon do we get there, and why would we even talk about a bounce or a consolidation? Simply put, because rates have been moving higher with such purpose in 2021 that we would expect some reprieve soon. That could last a couple weeks, could even last a month or two. And in that case, we would see yields in some sort of sideways to slightly stronger range for a little bit, and then ultimately expect them to push higher by the end of the year. That's going to do it for this week. I'll be back with you next week. And although I know Dave is definitely going to remind you guys, keep in mind, Licking on Lending listeners, get a free double time trial without any credit card requirement on mbslive.net. When you see the purchase code field, just type in LOL for Lincoln On Lending. That will double your free time and greatly speed up the trial registration process.
Good job. Appreciate it, Matt. Thank you for offering that special to our listeners. Take advantage of this. I have Matt's screen behind me all the time. MBS Live has got so much great information on here, and I'm sure you will find it as valuable as I. Thank you so much, Matt. Again, he's the founder and CEO of MBS Live. Check it out at mbslive.net. Appreciate it. Alice Halvey is here with us. Good to have you here. Alice is CMB Vice President of Education Training at Union Home Mortgage. Alice, did you have a good Easter?
I did. We had a wonderful Easter. The weather was beautiful. It was quiet with just Annie and I and my mom, and it was wonderful.
Oh, good. Well, that's so wonderful. You have those quiet ones. That's good. What you got for us? I think when you were talking just before the pre-program, you go, Dave, I got a lot of information covered. So let's get right into it. Thanks, Alice.
Yeah, I normally like to kind of keep it to three topics because otherwise I know all of you listening might go, okay, I'm losing her. But I will still try and kind of keep it summarized here so it's easy to follow. First of all, I want to follow up a little bit on what Rob mentioned for the MBA and Marcia Fudge's statement on the state of the Mutual Mortgage Insurance Fund, and there's no plan to decrease the premium. I think what I love about this quarterly report that I really recommend lenders check out is take a look at the credit score information and the trends and the DTIs. This is super helpful, I think, to understand if your underwriting, especially your manual underwriting, is on track with where HUD's overall portfolio is. Certainly, we can see that with our neighborhood watch numbers with what's already definitely causing us trouble. But I like to watch this to see overall historically, where are we with the credit score ranges that HUD has in their portfolio? And so we've been watching this for years. And what really still stands out for me is that 500 to 619 credit bucket. Now, granted, we don't touch 500 credit scores, but that 619, 600 for so many years, and especially old school underwriters, was a real sweet spot for FHA stuff where maybe your borrower had gotten back on their feet in the last 12 months and met all of FHA's criteria, but still didn't cross over into that better credit score range. And that bucket just keeps getting smaller and smaller and smaller. And so even though it's completely out of where it used to be 25% of HUD's portfolio, it's just noteworthy for those of you who are still doing manual underwriting. There's no correction there in any way, as we saw some improvements in the market recently. Same with DTI, sticking right there around that 43. So I recommend checking out that quarterly version as well as the annual report. There is way too much dependent on COVID to be able to try and predict reducing the MMI premium right now. So even though HUD says it's not off the table, they might look at it in the future. A true salesperson would be going, does that mean next month? And the answer is no. Okay, it's off the table this month. What about next month or next quarter? Stop it. It's going to take another annual report a little bit further into the impact of the vaccine on employment and the COVID unemployment numbers. There's just got to be a lot more stability, because if you know anything about these reports, they're trying to look ahead for many years to make sure they keep that capital ratio. And there's a lot of assumption in those reports. So just a quick heads up on that. I think that's always helpful for people to check out. The real big news happened when Freddie issued their bulletin about the investment properties and second homes. And if you read this closely, essentially it means Freddie's not taking them. So there's no manual underwriting of second homes or investments effective May 1st. As of April 15th, all LP second homes and investment properties will receive their yellow high likelihood of caution, basically ineligible rating. All that are submitted to their system after April 15th will get this rating. So it didn't appear like you could enter your key number from a previous run to keep your accept. So just a real big heads up that if you've got a loan marked Freddie only for some other underwriting criteria for an investment property second home, you got a real short window here to try and get that closed and delivered, because it's not going to be vacation date. So it's a big issue. And of course, no heads up that we were going to be limited to one agency. And we'll just keep watching this issue. The Urban Institute, there's a lot of great writing on this, did file a critique on this. And they stated an interesting fact that I wasn't aware of, that 1 to 4 family units make up half of all rental units, according to the Urban Institute. I thought that was super interesting. When you think of all the multifamily that's out there, over 5 and above commercial, I didn't realize 1 to 4 was that big of a market share. So thank you, Mortgage News Daily, Jan Swanson, for getting us connected. You can find the link to the Urban Institute's response from that article. The other big thing was the QM. So this whole thing, right, with Fannie and Freddie and the 7% revolves around their preferred stock purchase agreement. There's a lot in that PSPA, and with that is QM. So right now we have a proposed rule. You need to comment on it by today. It expires today to chime in on the revised QM rule that does away with the 43% and does away with Appendix Q. We all love that. We want that gone. We're totally in favor with this new QM rule that really just has us focus on it. If your APOR 2.5% above the APR. So anyway, if you're violating the APR rate, you've got the challenge of now you trigger a QM, which we're all used to. You just got some programming. The CFPB postponed this until October 1st of 2022. Great. We got all kinds of time to implement this. The challenge is in Fannie and Freddie's preferred stock purchase agreement, it references QM. So we've got to make sure that Fannie and Freddie are okay, that they can buy these. So we're still kind of watching to make sure all of that ties together, right? They're technically two separate agreements between what's going on with the CFPB, and they're extending the rule and making sure the GSEs are on board with that. So we will be watching that for you also this week. COVID stuff in general. COVID, we have CFPB rescinded their supervisory flexibilities. So those of you who are regulated by them, which is lots of lenders, you're not getting that extra gimme anymore because of COVID. And so that was not unexpected. We were all probably doing the best we could to stay in compliance anyway. So that wasn't as big of an impact. So other than VA not extending, they rescinded their COVID flexibility.
Really?
So MBA is working with them. That was a bit of a shock. We got an extension from everybody else for at least a couple more months, and VA did not extend there. So we're hoping to get that from them. The GSE did say their adverse market fee related to COVID is going to be here till December. So don't count on that 0.5% going away anytime soon. So that's a lot, Dave. And on top of that, HMDA was published. So 2020 HMDA data to start digesting. Lots going on right now. Make everybody's brains explode.
Getting a couple questions in from listeners right out of the gate. Are you seeing changes where people are taking the FICO score and lowering it now as volume?
Yeah, are lenders taking lower scores? Well, I can't speak for all lenders, right? I can just tell you what I go by and what I know is good business practices. When I did the consulting, tell folks, you don't want to be out of the box, right? When you look at HUD's numbers and you see it's a minuscule percentage of business that is at 619 or below, do you want to really be under that microscope? So at some companies, I might do them here and there. But for me, just from a risk analysis, I could never tell somebody, yeah, that's okay. So I don't see it in an industry that for lenders who are really cautious about making sure they're in line with what HUD expects.
Good. We are seeing some evidence of people doing that. So it's very common, although there's a number of them that are, I think, going down to 600. I understand that argument, but some going below 600, that starts really getting into the point where not too sure. But there are some that's going doing that.
If it's a good FHA file, it meets all the other criteria, and it's just really thin credit. If you've got something to go on to show that they're going to pay, I love FHA for that. The challenge is just how much of it, and do you have control of how much of your pipeline is going to be made up of that?
Exactly right. And the thin file is the one that I think is really, you raise such a good point. There's enough new buyers coming into the market, and a lot of the millennials who are buying homes for the first time using the FHA program, which is the purpose of that program, how it was originally designed, first-time home buyers, have a thin file, and they may be down in that lower end. So I think that's the right use. So it's like anything else, Alice, it's how it's administered. So thank you so much. Appreciate you being here, and hopefully you can participate all the way through into when we got Mark Helm coming on a little bit later on the podcast. Thank you so much. Really value it. Alan Pollock is here. Got to catch up with Alan. Folks, this dude knows what's going on in the market, mergers and acquisitions and happenings. This guy is dialed in, and we're so fortunate to have him here giving us the tech update. Alan, great talk with you this last week, and hear all that's going on. I know a lot of it we can't talk about on the podcast just yet, but lot happening. So So give us an update.
Yeah, great to be here. And I wish I knew it all, but I only know a couple fun things, but all exciting nonetheless. Point in the future, we definitely will be able to share it, and it will be super exciting or just old news at that point, right? It's yeah. One or the other. But you sent me a link, David, actually, to a report that had some really interesting things on it, kind of like a memoriam of all the things that have occurred in the last X amount of months, mm-hmm. including some yeah. last year. And I thought that was really interesting. There was a lot on there.
I get an M&A report, a lot of mergers and acquisitions, all that's going on. And it's pretty impressive, the amount of stuff that's going on. Is this considered a consolidation or just maturing of the mortgage tech?
Oh, I think it's maturing. It's probably a little bit of both. Mm-hmm. It's actually funny. So I'm scrolling through my update here because one of my items in my update was from the Housing Wire newsroom. Their post today suggested that there is a significant amount of M&A funding to expand consolidation and expanding technology nationally. So mm-hmm. in the end, there's people raising capital to build their solutions. And then there's obviously capital being put into companies for acquisition purposes to expand what they have. So there's all definitely a little bit of both going on. The great thing is that we have a very fluid type of industry where there are still barriers to entry, but there's not big barriers, right? There's partnerships yep. available. We're a very open industry, right? You can register for a conference. You can meet everyone and we're all friendly and you can suddenly start creating partnerships and relationships. And there's somewhere between 10 and 12,000 financial institutions. Those are depositories in the industry. And then, of course, you've got on HMDA, if you look at the report, there's probably 6 to 8,000 lenders that report to HMDA. So there's lots of opportunity to get in here. So I think it's a little bit of both, David.
Yep, makes sense. What do you see as some trends going on? Let me alert our listeners too.
Yeah, that's cool stuff. So one is a shower thought, which I read today on a newsletter I get every day. This one's great. We pay extra money to remove logos from software, but we add logos to our clothing. So I thought that was pretty good. Everybody always wonders, how do I white label this software and how do I make it my own? But we all wear clothing with the labels on it and we pay more for it. So David, get this. We talk about consumer apps and spending of consumers, how we're going mobile. Well, U.S. consumer spending on iPhone apps this year, or in the last 12 months, let's say, increased 38% to an average of $138. App intelligence firm Sensor Tower, so right, data, Sensor Tower is reading all this data. They expect the number to hit 180 in 2021. So that's really quite interesting, the amount of apps we have. Some auto-renew on our phone and some we pay one time for, whether it's our family with the family share plans mm-hmm. that our iPhone and our Android apps give us the ability to do. But spending is up, which means usage is up and adoption is up. David, Coinbase, America's largest cryptocurrency, right? That's the big word these days, cryptocurrency. They are the largest exchange. Well, they have a date to go public, which is April 14th, and their CEO has some very interesting information that you can find online. It's kind of very trend-setting, so you want to take a look at that. But really what interests me or intrigued me even further was Visa. They're the latest, by the way, to enter or to embrace crypto. And what they've now done, David, is they were in 2018 a $300 billion company and all cryptocurrency was only $200 billion. Today, Visa is a $450 billion company. Cryptocurrency is $1.8 trillion. That's how much this has exploded. So anyways, Visa, the reason why I mention it, they're coming out with a credit card that you now can use. You basically, what happens is you make purchases on this new crypto card, and instead of converting to what's called fiat, Visa will settle the transaction using crypto.com's USDC stablecoin, which is basically pegged to the US dollar to limit volatility. And get this, it's going to be done on what's called the Ethereum blockchain. Oh, so yeah. Really interesting stuff. Now, there's a lot of transactional costs. Visa is basically aggregating all of that together to lower to almost a nominal fee or no fee that transactional cost. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. But get this, other announcements have been made, David, in cryptocurrency. PayPal, Fidelity, and Goldman Sachs are all entering the cryptocurrency market, as well as many others such as BNY Mellon, BlackRock, JP Morgan Chase. So this is becoming a thing. Now, I don't think it directly affects our industry yet, just the global adoption of how money is being used and the fact that it all lives on blockchain. And we're going to be one of the best users of blockchain out there. So I just mentioned that. Plus, a lot of our mortgage real estate folks all have been very curious about cryptocurrency. And so there's your update. Black Knight Financial Solutions, BKFS. They've got a technology called Capture David. We've talked about it. It's their lead analytics platform, and it helps you identify loans in your servicing portfolio that are ready for refinance. Well, they've just done an update there, and they also have it integrated with Optimal Blue. So think about doing with what you already have, maintaining, sustaining, and growing relationships. And you can check it out, and now it has pricing as part of it. David, automated underwriting and real estate transactions, right? You've never heard me say that before. A company called Spruce, that's like the tree,
oh, yeah?
Spruce, S-P-R-U-C-E. It has now mentioned, or they have now mentioned, they have an automated tool that now can provide a fully underwritten title commitment in just minutes. You can complete the title search and the underwriting, fundamentally changing the way transactions are processed today. How cool is that, right?
Very innovative.
Yeah. So fintech firm Plaid, we know, they just raised $13 billion in, they're raising new money at a $13 billion valuation. There's no transaction completed. But remember, this comes after the Department of Justice killed the $5.3 billion deal with Visa. And apparently the reason why is just because of anti-competition rules, the fact that there's this new valuation and they're looking for cash. So obviously Plaid is continuing to expand. They're looking to do more. So if you have $13 billion laying around, or if you want to be part of that valuation, you want to check out Plaid. And David, this is super, super important, and I wanted to stay on the topic. Next week, we're going to talk about, just in case you happen to end the listening to our podcast right before I talk about what's called feedback to feature, how to pivot based on customer needs, how to do it and how to use it, meaning when your customers ask for something, how do you change your technology, knowing we're so consumer-focused and so based on user experience. But let's talk about product principles. So what we have this week, David, are six really quick things. They're not long. And, you know, we talked about last week about gamification. Well, let's talk about what those actual details are. When you're thinking about your product, whether it's internal users, you're working with your vendor, you want to think of these really quick things. Number one, you want to tell users what to think. You don't want to have to think about, do they match what it is that you've provided? You should know what the market is you're attaining, and you should understand how they think and tell them what they need. You should minimize the cognitive load to that user. Don't overload them with too much to see. Make it really easy and simple. Add white space. White space is not a bad thing. It's a good thing. You want to have click activity. Everything should be within 3 clicks maximum. You shouldn't have anything that's more than 3 clicks. In addition, you want to have a reversible design. So you should be able to undo any action that you've made. There should be little X's or delete buttons or undos.
That's a great point.
You also want to use verbs. So that reversible design is super important. You want to use verbs with context. Instead of just saying yes or no, say yes, delete this message. Let your users understand what they're clicking on. And the last one is don't be too disruptive with too many options. Again, I mentioned white space earlier. Use that white space. So we'd be more than happy to talk about these in more detail, but those are product principles, and that's how to attain and maintain your user experience.
You know who does a really good job of that is FormFreak.
Who is that?
Brent Chandler.
They do a great job.
They really did a great job designing that website. Alice, you had a great comment. You texted me about agencies and crypto. Talk about it real quickly.
Sure. Yeah. So since you were bringing up about cryptocurrency becoming at least a little more mainstream and again in the headlines, Fannie and Freddie did issue guidance about this to explain a large deposit, so to speak, if someone did cash in cryptocurrency and is using that for funds to close. The challenge is that how do you verify ownership, right? They want the full paper trail that the borrower actually owned the cryptocurrency. It's got to be liquidated. So usually you're saying prior to underwriting, I need to see the paper trail, which means the borrower is liquidating it early because that's what the agencies want. So I just wondered if folks have an idea on how this is going to happen. I would love to see how secret currency gets verified that you're the owner. I don't know enough about it to know how that's going to happen.
Well, I think what it goes to is definitely people are recognizing this crypto thing is just, it's real, it's here. But then how much do we require? So they obviously, by asking for that, trade a lack of knowledge about what's going on. But I understand the requirement. We have to talk more on this crypto thing. That is going to be feeling into it. But I look like the blockchain, that's what Brent is doing over there at FormFreak, giving them 2 shouts out here on the podcast. So good job. Very good. Thanks, Alice, for sending that over. And Alan, thank you so much for bringing us an update. Good job. Well, that wraps up, everybody. The first half, again, we divide the podcast into 2 segments. The first part is what we just completed, is the mortgage update we do each week. If you're listening live, just stay right here. We're going to get right into the hot topic segment. If you're listening on a downloaded basis, you're going to want to move right on to the next hot topic, because we're going to go there now. Welcome to the hot topic segment of the Licking on Lending podcast. It's April 5th, and we're excited to have my business partner joining us, Mark Helm. He's a very well-recognized name in the industry. Talking a little bit about leadership, his background, his journey. We're going to really get into the real meat of what we want to get into is the Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, Ginnie Mae approval process, what's been going on there. And if we have time, we're going to get into a little bit talking about loan servicing. But that probably is going to have to be another podcast. Mark, good to have you on the podcast, friend. Appreciate it.
Thank you, David.
Well, yeah, I can't believe anyone that's listening doesn't know who you are, but we are getting older and there's a new generation coming in, Mark. So tell us a little bit about yourself and your background.
Well, David, I don't seem to think we're getting older. I just think we're getting better.
I think that's a good way to say it. Okay.
I'm going to subscribe to that. Yes, sir.
Yeah,
Well, I'm entering my 44th year in the mortgage banking industry. I have done everything except for two little things I'll talk about. But I started off as a branch manager, became an area manager, became a regional manager, made the move to loan operations and eventually to servicing, have been everything from a chief operating officer of a company to a president and CEO of a company, have enjoyed what I've done in the industry and enjoyed the challenges I've seen, because I've been in so many different environments. I was with one company that specialized in damage servicing and cleaning it up, and that was an interesting assignment. Also worked for Washington Mutual, one of the largest servicers in the country, with millions of loans. David keeps mentioning that I have my work nearly done on my doctorate in psychology, and I do. And I never dreamed that would come in handy till I had 2,800 employees, and it comes in real handy in dealing with all the things we have to do with employees. But the only two things in the industry that I haven't managed directly, but I have been responsible for, being the president and chief operating officer of different companies, is directly managing capital markets and directly being a CPA. I've never been my own CFO. Don't intend to do that, ever want to do that. There's good people that can do that, I can hire. And the other side is in capital markets. I've just always had really good people support me in that area. I have been very, very fortunate. In my 44 years, I have learned so much from the people I work with, and I've had the ability to be at the right place at the right time and work in many environments where I got educated by some of the best. And some of those people are retired now. Some have been recently presidents or CEOs of their own companies, and some are still actively involved in the industry as consultants. So along my journey, I will have to tell you that I can't say enough about the relationships I've developed and what I've learned from my counterparts. And it's amazing how we still talk frequently, many of us on the phone, about things and over each other's resources, and a listening ear to issues that come up in the consulting business or with companies. So that makes it a really great industry to be a part of. David wanted me to mention that when I was president and CEO of my last company, it was a reverse mortgage company, my partners and I put a very small amount of money into the company and formed that company, and then became the largest Ginnie Mae issuer for reverse mortgages in the country. And 5.5 years later, sold our company for over $100 million. And with the help of a private equity firm, it was our partner on it. And that's allowed me to do something uniquely different. I don't have to do what I do. I do because I want to give back to the industry. It was good to me, very good to me, and I want to give back my experience and my ability to advise people to grow their companies the right way. So I consider myself not to be just a mortgage banker, but an entrepreneur, because it takes entrepreneurship in our business for people to make the right kind of decisions to pilot their company in the right directions. And so I hope to facilitate that process as I work with people in our industry. And David has allowed me to do that through the many things we've done together.
Yeah, it's such an honor to have you be a part of the team and be partnered with you, Mark. I value you. And to know that you are just a few degrees short of a PhD in psychology, family counseling, is just astounding. Did you ever think that that would ever come to be such a powerful tool in mortgage lending with all the drama that goes in this? I can only imagine that has been a very effective education, and much more practical than some might otherwise have thought.
Well, it's interesting you asked that question, David, because I look at what you do, and I know you do a lot of it in coaching with companies, and really you do what is a derivative, what I have the ability to do, and you do it quite effectively with many companies that need the coaching to grow the right way and for the partnerships to get along, et cetera. And I've realized more and more as I go out on assignment, sometimes you've got to apply a little bit of that, psychological background to the situations you're in, to get people motivated in the right directions and point out things to them where they can see the direction themselves, where it's not you're given a lecture and saying this is the thing you need to do, et cetera, et cetera. It actually becomes a cumulative effect of you interfacing together with the people to share your knowledge and be able to give them some constructive direction to be successful in our industry. So I think the psychology piece with me has been an integral element in making me successful in the industry, and I don't think I'd be here today doing the things I'm doing if I hadn't had that educational background and done the work I've done in the past with that.
Well, I've certainly seen the benefit of that education and training as we've worked to help people get their Fannie, Freddie, and Jenny Mae approvals. Before Mark, you and I teamed up and partnered up here in a Transformational Mortgage Solutions, I did a lot of those approvals. I've had different ones helping me with it, and we were batting 1,000, but that's back what seems now, we're looking back in the easy days, because things have changed dramatically in getting the GSE approvals, Fannie and Freddie, as well as Jenny Mae. And I want to really focus the rest of our podcast time on it. For those that are considering becoming approved, what would you say? Is this a great move? Is this something that you should just give it up? It's just too difficult? Or what would you say to those considering getting a Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac approval?
It's a journey, not a short trip.
Yep.
And I subscribe to a little philosophy I had for a long time in telling people they can do a self-assessment of they're ready to apply. The people have to be honest with themselves. They have to really be honest about what their company's doing and what they believe the future is going to be. They have to be very accurate in what they do and the information they provide to agencies. And last but not least, they need to own the process. They need to show some tenacity in the process. Yeah. And if a person and their management team can subscribe to that, I think they can realistically sit down and evaluate themselves with the help maybe of others of whether or not they should be applying. I will have to tell you that there are a lot of people that shouldn't be applying. So one of the things that we do, first off, we do an assessment. We have a lender application form that you and I talked about and we develop. And we give that questionnaire form to the lenders and they fill it out. And from that and certain reports they give to us, we sit down and go back to them and tell them what we think their weaknesses are and where their strengths are and whether they should apply. Some of the agencies have some requirements now that requires years worth of things, like Jenny Mae requires you to have serviced loans for a few years that had performing and non-performing characteristics, both of those. They also require you to have a portfolio that averaged $250 million a month for the 12-month preceding your application date. So a lot of people are blocked out for a period of time till they meet those requirements out there. But the real thing is trying to figure out what people want to do and what they need, because the relationships with the GSEs are not necessarily, you don't need all three if you're certain lenders. You need, is there one better for you than others? There could be. It all depends. Could you get approved of one and not get approved of other? Yes, you could. And what we do, and David, we're still batting 1,000, as you know, but yep. Our goal is really to make sure we review the information. And if a person's, in our opinion, is not going to get approved, we tell them. And we'll tell them why we don't think they're going to get approved. Can't stop them from applying if they want to. But I think we know what the checklist looks like the agency is looking for. And we think we're good advisors on that and help them build to and being competent to be approved. And so that's our mission in life, is making sure we give the right kind of advice to our clients so they don't end up having a disapproval on their record with one of the agencies that they've applied to. So if we accomplish that and eventually get people to finish line, I feel like we've been successful.
As one of our listeners, Rose, just says, I don't believe that you're batting 1,000. Here's the answer, listeners. If we're batting 1,000 on every application we recommend they submit. There are some people that have applied. We said, you're not ready. They've gone and in, run around and gone and tried to get it themselves, and they have been turned down. And so we don't submit every application. We're not going to submit you unless we feel that you are ready and we'll work with you. And sometimes, like you said, Mark, it's a journey. Talk a little bit about how things have changed. What you and I both, while we had our own independent mortgage banking companies, we could talk so much more about that journey. And there's so many great stories in that. But you had your Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac approvals, Jenny Mae approvals, and it was a lot different back then getting that approval than what we're seeing today. Give us some insights into what are the GSEs specifically looking for in experience that they didn't previously.
I think the biggest thing is early on when you were getting approved by the GSE, you'd fill out the documentation, submit it, and you get an approval. And then it would be a little while before you really heard from anybody. Most of the process up front was you learning how to board loans and do the transaction. And then sometimes you might go for a while without getting an audit from them to come in. And then they look at your internal audits and things like that. So what's different nowadays is the GSEs have a reality of looking at you to make sure you have appropriate expertise internally to handle loans that are performing and non-performing, non-performing being the most critical, that you basically have some kind of size portfolio that's meaningful. I mean, the last thing they want to do is give you an approval and have you never deliver loans to them. And
right.
So some of the requirements from the GSEs is required if you don't deliver loans over a period of time, your GSE approval might go away. They're looking for that inherent experience you have by having a certain size portfolio there. They're also looking for you to have robust quality control programs, both for your servicing and your origination. And the most impact we have right now, if anything, is the fact they want to see that you have a servicing oversight staff internally. And they want that servicing oversight staff to have not only the default management, which I think is critical, but also the servicing oversight experience and then investor management, investor reporting, investor accounting, and cash management internal to your operations. Unfortunately, that position is very hard to recruit in one person because usually servicing professionals that come up through the ranks generally don't have default experience and servicing accounting experience inside the same person unless you're looking for somebody who managed those one level up. And sometimes the management one level up doesn't have the depth of experience that the agencies would like to have. So in many cases, having a servicing oversight staff might mean you've got multiple people, some with the accounting expertise and some with the default management and general servicing expertise. That's the biggest change, and that is a change that's out there. Maybe not a change completely. It was always kind of there,
yeah.
But it's been documented now, and people are looking at it. And all the GSAs are looking at that. Every one of them wants to see what's your experience, your people looking at resumes. When we do an application, it goes back to what we talked about the honesty. One of the first things we do, we get the resumes of the people that work for a company, and we rework those resumes to make sure they put the right foot forward. But they also, we're making sure that it's thoroughly accurate, and they show the expertise of what they've dealt with. And we know that in doing that, then the GSEs in the application process or whoever they might be using to help them in it, either internally or externally, can look at it and say, let's check the block on these guys because they have the experience that they have on that. And that's the most critical piece. If you don't have the financials, if you don't have the net worth and those things, you don't have a robust quality control plan.
Right.
There's a lot of other reasons you get knocked out, but get out of the gate. You got to have the experience they're looking for that they want to take you on as somebody to provide them loans that you're going to service either through your own servicing you set up or through a subservicer.
And a lot of people think, well, I'll just hire someone on a temporary basis that has that in their background. It's got to be recent experience. Talk about the challenge you've had trying to find people with adequate experience, especially with all the approval requests that are coming at us. That's been a challenge, hasn't it, Mark?
It certainly has. And even though we don't consider ourselves to be recruiters, that's not our mainstay, we know people in the industry. Mm-hmm. And it's been very, very difficult. I liken this comparison. It's harder to find people with the right kind of experience to be in a servicing oversight position today than it is to find a really, really good tenured underwriter. And I think everybody on the podcast would probably recognize what I'm saying when I say that, because it is
right.
So hard right now to find that tenured experience in servicing oversight where people actually have the hands-on experience in the different areas that we have. And that's a very expensive position to hire nowadays.
No.
I've seen those that are high six-figure positions right now. High meaning more than 100,000, but probably less than 200. But they're out there, but most of them are in jobs somewhere else. So you got to find somebody that is willing to make a change. And a lot of these positions, they have to be, for the most part, full-time. Certainly with Freddie Mac and applications recently and Ginnie Mae, they're looking for full-time. And when you do that on a full-time basis, a lot of the people are working remote in this position, and that's what the companies are using to entice them, saying, we got to have you full-time, but you can work remote, so we're not going to ask you to relocate from Maine to South Florida, from California to Texas, or whatever the case
right.
might be. So we're finding people that way. But I get asked every day, do you know somebody that I can hire for this position, and who would you recommend? And I'd have to say to those people ask me that question, so I'm hunting those people just as much as you are right now for other clients that need to find somebody.
Yep. It's probably one of the biggest challenges, and that is a big factor now. If you do not have the experience, you're not on board. We're hired as an employee. You're not going to get approved. Talk about what it takes to get a Ginnie Mae approval. and some of your experiences there.
Well, I would have to say that they had some changes, and it's the well thought out changes. They came out with some changes to the regs in December of last year, and it caught us with a bunch of people in the application process that we had to stand down and say we're going to have to try a little bit later. And I've talked about a number of those things that they brought up on that. They want that full-time servicing oversight people, a person with that experience, not only in default management and also investor accounting, or multiple people filling that role. They want it to be full-time. They want to have a year's worth of servicing of an average balance of $250 million a month for the year preceding your application. They want to have 2 years experience of you servicing loans, both in a performing and non-performing statute. They're looking for in-house management. They don't want two officer companies. They want a minimum of 3 officer companies that can have layered officers that focus on the Ginnie Mae relationship. You know, Ginnie Mae is just like any GSE, and they want to make sure they're protecting what they do and make sure they're protecting the industry. So they're making sure that we don't let people in the gate that don't qualify, but at the same time, we've got to give them accurate rules to follow as what we're needing. So they've done a really good job at Ginnie Mae of outlining what they need in the program now for approval. Now, we still look at tons of other things inside those applications. Net
right.
worth, they want to see volumes of origination and state footprint, state licenses, and it goes on and on. My checklist that I use for a Ginnie Mae approval has 34 items that we put together and has another 20 items that we found are questions that Ginnie Mae comes back and asks in an application, which we have our clients now go ahead and prepare that information too, because they're probably going to get asked for it. In comparison, we have less of a number that we do for Freddie Mac, but they come back and ask questions too, and with Fannie Mae, and they come back and ask questions. So what we've done over the past couple of years, we put together some very good documentation so we can ask the questions before you get asked by Freddie, Fannie, or Ginnie in an application proper. And that's what brings our value on, because we've touched so many folks. And we're right now monitoring about 4 or 5 clients that will apply to sometime in the future for their approvals. And they're going to do that based on them meeting hurdles that they need to know that they can get approved. And I reiterate what David said. Yes, we might have 100% approval rate, and that's great. But the reason why we do is we're not going to let somebody go down a path and get disapproved because of something basic. There might be something in the future where the GSA disagrees with our opinion about the person, or they might not agree with the information that was submitted was adequate enough to get approved. We might have one turned down. We haven't yet. But the most important thing, we're doing our level best to make sure that everybody that we help fill out an application, send it in, has done everything they can to put their best foot forward and show to the GSAs that they should be approved and they merit being approved to deliver loans to those agencies. And if we do our job, then they can do their job.
Yeah, we always tell people, if you're interested in us, just work and submit you, find someone else. If you're interested in getting approved, then you'll definitely want to work with us. We're not interested in just submitting packages and throw them against the wall. We're going to choose to get you approved. We're going to choose not to be involved. Alice, any questions as you listen to this discussion of working with the GSEs? Now, I knew Union Home has all their approvals. I've had them for some time. But what comes to mind as you listen to this discussion, Alice?
Well, a couple things. Having worked with clients in the past and worked with you, Dave, as they're large and small trying to figure out what the best strategy is, I just want to reiterate the difference in getting someone who will get you approved in that first submission is you can't even really put words to how valuable that is, because it's really, you're just going to be missing the mark on some of the key things that they're going to have questions about, like you guys have talked about. The other thing is just impression and reputation, right? That's part of the package. Yeah. And you look like you've got your act together, even in submitting it. If you can't get that package right, they're concerned about, can you even get the rest of the docs right that they're going to be getting from you? So anyway, I just wanted to throw that in of how valuable it is to get the support and experience. So thank you both for what you do. But my question for you, if you're a lender who's just starting out and you've got to pick who's first, do I go with Fannie or Freddie as my first ticket that I want to try and get? Ginnie Mae usually second because it's a full issuer, but I'd love your thoughts on where does someone start first?
I can give you my thoughts on that. I recommend Freddie first, Fannie second, and Ginnie third. And I recommend that as you're filling out your Freddie, some of the information you're gathering is the same for Fannie. So you'd be gathering that knowing that you might have to update some of it. and I would get your Freddie Mac approval done, and I would get some deliveries under your belt for a few months, and then I would apply for Fannie Mae because that gives you another level of execution you can do, and then do the same thing there. Once you get it submitted, the minute you get your approval, do a few months of deliveries to Fannie Mae. And I can't say that's 2 months, 6 months, or 9 months, or a year. I'm saying a few months. And then it depends on your size. If you're big enough that you can do those multiple deliveries and do fairly large ones over a period of time, you can move on and then apply for your Ginnie, because Ginnie likes to look at your other approvals you have. Years ago, it was never written in a book, but not that many years ago, Ginnie Mae kind of looked at you and said, you got to have your Fannie Mae approval before we approve you. I mean, they didn't say that, but that's what was there. It was kind of like they're using Fannie Mae's approval as a precursor to giving consideration for a Ginnie Mae approval, you know. And then we've had, of course, that Fannie Mae was always for the mortgage bankers and Freddie Mac was always for the other folks that are out there. And we've had things break down like that. But I definitely, that's what I would recommend, and that's what I recommend to my clients. And I stick to it. And it's amazing, though, how many clients I have already have their Fannie Mae approval and are trying to get their Freddie Mac, because we'll have a lot of that. And I will tell you, too, that about 20% of our clients that we have on the shelf right now are people that did go out and work up their application on their own and got turned down. And now we're helping them work through that process to put a package together so they can be approved. And some of it's waiting for a while till they get the portfolio right and other things they're doing. But we do have a backlog of folks that are kind of on the bench right now that we're working hard to get them packages together where we think they can get approved.
Is it kind of like you started a home improvement project without getting the right contractors? And
it
now it's like twice as much root work and the fees go up.
Sometimes it can be starting a home improvement project before you realize the floor is falling in on the house.
Right.
And it's so point. There's a lot of people out there that are into helping you apply. There's not a lot of people that have the knowledge to make sure you get approved. And I think that's really the point you're driving to, Alice, which is really good. And Mark, tell the story that we have a client, we won't mention their name, who their CFO came to the president and says, we're not using this Ginnie Mae approval. Let's just get rid of it. It costs us time. We have to, let's just turn it in. And he foolishly convinced the owner of the company, the president, CEO, to, relinquish his Ginnie Mae approval. And then, of course, the markets turned around for you. Liquidity was an issue earlier this year, or this last year, and he needed it back. And he says, oh, no problem. I'll just go get it. I just had it. Talk about that story, because I think that's one that drives home a point.
Well, that lender went back to get their approval and got turned down. And then right after they got turned down, one of the main reasons they got turned down was not having the service and oversight person. So they hired a very, very good servicing oversight person, one of the best ones in the industry that I know of, a long-term friend of mine. And then the rules changed. The rules changed in December, and they did not meet some of those requirements under the rule changes. So now they're in a kind of a holding pattern, and they got a good man on board as their servicing oversight person. So they'll be there, and they will get their approval. There's no doubt in my mind about it, but there's no grandfathering on anything but Ginnie Mae because you had been approved at one time before or anything like that. It's all by the regulation and the new rules have been established.
Yeah,
so they got double whammied, so to speak.
Yeah, and you mean you had said to think, Dave, that I had approval. I just, no problem, let's give it back to me. Let me have my approval back. Nope, sorry, doesn't work out that way. That opens the whole topic, and we're going to wrap it up with just touching base on loan servicing. You serviced, or you chaired the committee for the MBA on mortgage servicing for years. And so you're probably one of the recognized most foremost authorities on loan servicing. And we're going to have you back to cover that topic in depth. But for those that are considering loan servicing, what would you say to them in light of recent market developments?
I will tell you this. I will tell you that loan servicing is not for everyone, okay? It's an elongated process. You got to make decisions whether you can grow fast enough to bring it in-house or whether you're going to use a subservicer. Every subservicer is a little bit different. It can be different to suit the type of portfolio you have, regional-based subservicing. Some have better automation than others. So there's a process And the process is you got to make the decision on cost benefit of whether you want to get into the servicing business, assuming you're going to do subservicing first. And then you got to decide, is subservicing something I'm going to live with the whole time I'm a servicer, or is subservicing something I'm only going to do for a year, and then when I get to X number of loans, I bring them in-house. I know how many loans that is when you should think about bringing it in-house, okay? I can help people, you know, guide on that. That's what we kind of do. But I think the most important thing about the servicing environment is that people don't realize it's a real piece of functionary that you have internal to the mortgage banking industry. And just because you have your loan subserviced by someone else did not mean you're relieved from the responsibilities from GSEs of servicing oversight, of quality control that you do yourself, of audits that you do yourself. Because just because you have a subservicer who has quality control, does internal audits, and reports to you every month what they've done with your portfolio and some foundation, that does not give you a pass. So just remember that even when you're doing subservicing, you're still the servicer record and you still have to do those other things. And people don't know that. People actually get into the servicing business and don't touch their servicing portfolio till they get an audit from Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac. And then they say, oh, I was supposed to do that?
We're getting a lot of questions and we don't have time for Mark, which means we're just going to have to roll that whole servicing discussion into another podcast, which we're going to have you on back here fairly soon to get into that, because it is something, there is great value in that asset. I mean, you retain servicing, it is a real value. It's an asset. It's one that can expand and contract. You can hedge it. You can manage it, but it isn't for everybody. And I think everyone needs to realize that and hear all of your experience. So we can't wait to have you back, Mark, to talk about loan servicing. Got a couple questions coming in on approvals right now. So here's one question. Mark, are you telling us that Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, we can't apply directly, that it's best to work with someone?
I think you can do it yourself, but I would suggest you follow my hat, the honesty, accuracy, and tenacity to get it done, because it's something you got a window you got to get it done in once you start the process and go online with your application. And you got to be honest about your information. Don't stretch the truth, because they can read through reports and all and tell that. Make sure you're right. And accuracy is the same way. You need to accurately represent what you've been doing with your portfolio. We've developed a business to help people get their approvals and do it quicker. A friend of mine used to use the terminology better, quicker, faster. It all sounds redundant, but better, quicker, faster. That's what we kind of believe in, better, quicker, faster, because we've lived the battle ourselves in our own careers, and we know how to put this information together, and we're very professional about it. And if you don't want to go through that learning curve internally to have to do that on a one-off for an approval for an agency, we'll be glad to help you. If you want to do that yourself, if you follow my rules, that honesty, accuracy, and tenacity, you can get it done.
That's very good, Mark. I'm chuckling as I think about some of the resumes that they've put in packages. So we do pick up a lot of people after they've tried to get approved. They got in decline. And so that's when we'll pick it up. And then you read the resumes that they submitted and you go, I'm proficient in. And then you look at what's there and they're going, oh, my gosh, it is knitting all the way through to some of the craziest stuff. Well, and it's like a good loan package. You got to put your story together well and have it. Those three defining values.
To you that the agencies don't care whether you have WordPerfect experience.
Yes, that's the one. I've got WordPerfect experience, so I'm qualified to get a Jenny May, or Fannie Mae, Freddie, Jenny approval. That was so funny. Anyway, Mark, thank you so much for taking time to join us. How can people get a hold of you, Mark?
Get a hold of me? Yeah. Well, they can get me at mark@tms-advisors.com, which is our email address at TMS. And, hey, I wear my cell phone on my hip. Anybody got a question about anything, they can call me at 713-203-0031. And I will get back to you fairly quickly.
Yeah, thank you so much, Mark. Appreciate it very much for you being here. We've had Mark Helm, industry expert, talking about getting approved of the GSEs, Fannie, Freddie, and Jenny Mae. It's a journey that you do need help with, folks, and we encourage you to get a hold of Mark. We're honored to be able to work together, and it's such a pleasure to work with someone who has got the experience and the integrity. It's what's a big part of it for me, integrity and quality character. Tell people sometimes the emperor's probably not fully dressed, and you're not ready. You're going to be embarrassed if you go in front of the GSEs and looking like that. So that's what we're here to help you with. So don't hesitate to call us, get a hold of us. Next week, we got Kevin Crichton coming on. We're going to be focusing on positioning yourself for a post-pandemic industry in 2021. Kevin's been in the industry for a long, long time. Anyone who knows Kevin Crichton, he is a true leader and a true forward thinker. And I can't wait to get his thoughts next week on the podcast. Say a special thank you to our sponsors, Finastra, CMLA, Indicom, Incelerate, Mobility, MMI, as well as Modex, the MBA, Knowledge Coop, Lenders One, and the Mortgage Collaborative. Thanks so much, everybody, for being on the podcast today. Share this around, and we look forward to having you back here next week.
You've been listening to Lickin on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Transformational Mortgage Solutions. Join us next week, and thanks for listening.